Station number 16715, John Jarvis, Rail 2.
Mr. Jarvis, Rail 2. We're talking about your working life, Mr. Jarvis.
Yes.
Can we go back to the very first job that you had in the bottling department at the brewery?
Yes, yes.
What hours did you work?
I used to work eight hours, 9 hours a day. I believe it was nine. It was 7 o'clock to five. And you'd have a break at dinner time, you know. Yeah, it'd be 9 hours a day, yes.
And how many days a week?
Five and a half. It was 5 days and a half a day on a Saturday, see? I think for that I used to get about 7 shilling, but I think it was 7 shillings when I first started. Then I tell you, I went from there to the mines, and I was there maybe a year and a half. And then they started that big building concern at Catterick, you know, building these big barracks for the soldiers and that. Now in the building trade, you get a man's wage at 18. And of course, the lure of money again. I was making 7 and 6 and 10 shilling a week, and I got a chance of going to a place where I could get £2.26 a week, which is a sport, was a fortune, you know. So we were the first ones that ever went to work at this country. In fact, the first bus we had to walk, team would get, that's 2 mile away, catch the bus to Catterick. When he come back, he used to drop us off at Aimwoodgate and walk down home from Aimwoodgate. I couldn't see them doing that nowadays. We used to kick off in the morning about 6 o'clock and get home about 11 at night. That was for 8 hours actual work. But the £2.26 was, them days was a man's wage, and we were just 18, you know. Well, of course, we felt over the moon. Now, I worked there until the war started. I worked there, and of course, when the war started, just before the war started, I went down to volunteer. Because that mate of mine I was telling you about, he did join the Navy, see? Now, when I went down to volunteer, he said, you're too near to calling up time, your conscription time, see?
What kind of time would this be? What date?
What would it be? July, August, somewhere around about there. You know, just after the war started. Just after the scare.
1939.
Aye. And, see, I was 20 in November, and they said I should wait till November, and then they'd pick their forces for us. And that's how I got into the Light Infantry. When I went down and they put us in the army and put us in the light infantry.
Had you asked to go in the army?
I did want to go in the Navy. I fancied the Navy very, very much. I always and I tell you, my mate was in the Navy, the poor lad never come back, like, you know, he went down. But I fancied the Navy, yeah, I fancied it very much. I'd have been over the moon if I any road. You couldn't pick and choose very much in them days, you know, at the beginning of the war, this, that.
What signs were there at that time of that war was coming? Did you realise it was serious?
Oh, aye. I mean, I volunteered in August, and the war didn't start in September. Well, it had been on about a month when I joined up. I joined up in November. But even in August, we had, you know, we thought it was... there's going to be a bit of a dough, you know.
Was there anything happening in the way of letting people know the thing in sandbags going up or air raid shelters being built or this kind of thing prior to the war itself?
At first we sort of took no notice of it, you know. We thought when that Chamberlain man come back and facing our time, you know, we also believe it. Politicians in them days, you know, we thought he's a better educated man than we are, and he told us there was going to be no war. And that was it. Well, of course, when I remember the day we came into war, because we're all, the person at Top Howe Street, he had the best wireless in the village, you know, and we all gathered around to hear the news. And this day, and this solemn note came into his voice, and I thought, by God, there's something wrong here, you know. And he'd already told us that he'd invaded Poland or somewhere, and we were at war with the Germans, and he tried to keep the peace and just wouldn't work, and that was it. And we all started dancing about, oh, We'll beat them in 2 weeks if we were to say it. You give me a platoon in the drum night and think we'll go through them in 3 weeks, you know, that was our attitude. We were very patriotic, you know, in them days, we were very, very patriotic, very conscientious now, I would say.
How did your family take it? Because you were at an age where you would actually be going to war.
That's right.
How did your parents take that?
Well, they had no mother then, I just had my father, and my older sister looked after us. No, they didn't know them at all, you know.
That's the First World War being a terrible experience, and that would be in your father's mind, surely. Then.
Aye, well,
it might happen to you.
You know, he didn't really get him worked up or nothing like that. He was pretty good about it. But to be quite honest, we were all pretty cheerful. I'll give you an example. Later on, when I was at Spennymoor, I done my train, and I did train a couple of months at Spennymoor, and then Ashwin and Bransforth. We played at Bransforth, and we got a chance of coming out. Anybody with any mine experience, we got a chance of coming out the forces and going back to the mines. And my mate says to me, "Are you going?" I says, "I haven't. I'm stopping here. I like it. I like the army. I tell you the truth." I thought it was a holiday, you know. Well, did we all thought, "Why we'll be run over top of us like he did the Poles, and we'll knock hell out of them," you know. It's nice to be patriotic like that. No, we didn't. We were full of confidence, 100% full of confidence.
After the declaration of war, there was still a spell when you were still working. For a short time after September.
About a month, October.
And were you still at Catrick then?
Yes. Excuse me. I was at Catrick right till I joined up, yes. I was there.
What was the process of joining up?
You had to sign on and say 20. It come in the papers and all the thing that everybody 20-year-old, so on your 20th birthday or the day before, the day after, I don't know which, you went down to the local offices at Bishop Barton and you got a letter. I got a letter to go to the Clarence Rink at Spennymoor. I don't know if you know the Rink at Spennymoor. There's somebody in the region of what, 200 of us in the Rink. It was a big, the Clarence Rink, it had been a Rink, you know, and Saturday and Sunday night used to be ballroom. Later on after the what was a sort of club where they used to get all these good turns and sing and dance and do this hokey-cokey. And I went to Spennymoor and I joined up at Spennymoor. See, I was conscripted. What would they call conscription, wouldn't it? And
you got no say as to where you were going, they just put you in the Dunlight Infantry.
Yeah. I just got word out to depart to say, and you just went with the oldest clothes you could find, you know, because you knew you were going to, well, you expected you were going to get a uniform. We got a uniform, you know, of description, and then in them days you could take your uniform home, and if your mother or your wife or your sister was handy with the needle, they would see all that they fit you, sort of style, you know. Because they used to just look at it and get you started, you know. And when you come out of civvies, your first time in uniform, it's very important. And they look shabby at times, you know.
So you went to Spennymoor. This is where you joined.
Yes.
And were you at Spennymoor for the initial days or weeks?
We were there down training, maybe. Yes, we were there down training a long time.
You didn't go to Bransforth Castle?
We went there for our, what they call it, our rifles. Later on, we were there quite a while before we got a rifle, and of course you get a rifle and a number, rifle number.
The uniform that you initially got, you said it was of a sort. What did they give you in the beginning?
You get a uniform and a set of denims. You know them denims. They were to train with and crawl about the floor with. You did schemes, you know, a little went down the park at Spennymoor and. And we crept about the park, you know, and they'd pretend we were lying ambush and bits of training, you know, and it saved you a good shoot for parades and things like that, you know. And church parades on a Sunday, you got your best towers out and you pressed them, and Well, a lot of lads got this idea of stitching the crease in the trousers, you know, and then you actually put them on these bedboards and lie on them, and when you put them on, oh, they were like a knife edge, you know, and that's how they like them. When you got your putties on, they used to be straight down, like, you know, like they were very, very smart. You see, when you went on guard, you used to get what they called a stick. That was the colonel's early. And you didn't do no guards if you were the smartest man on. So everybody used to buy, used to spit and polish the shoes and the gaiters scrubbed or whitewashed or blank or whatever was part of the day. And you used to be standing there, oh, from top to bottom, shine like a. And if he picked you, well, you didn't do your guards. All you did was run the errands, maybe get the tea for the guard, and maybe the breakfast. Or if the CO wanted a message taken somewhere, you'd maybe take it. Practically off duty for that day, because you're the smartest man in parade. And you know, there was a lot of competition for this big job. I remember a lot of lads, a lot of competition. What he did was the first month or two were in, it was just like playing soldiers, you know, at home. I suppose we were fitter then than we'd ever been in our lives, because it was nothing on a cold November morning just to turn out in the park and doing it on half speed, which we wouldn't know if we'd been at home. And I know one Saturday time I remember very vividly. We'd been and Pete Eanes took me, used to be in a box like a dial, and I raised up, and we were right round them, maybe 200 or 300 of us, you know. And he says, he came to dinner time, and I was kept saying to my mate, I missed 12:10 bus. Say, the bus is just run 12:10 from Spennymoor to Bishop Arton to West Arton. I said, I'm going to miss my bus, though, this is bothering the night. Well, I'll catch next. And then he rode, he turned down, he said to me, he said to all of us, like, you've been that good, he says, I'm going to give you another now. He says, you've been splendid. And we've gone him off. We danced about then in all this PT until about 1 o'clock then he broke us off. It was just like a discipline, and a way of discipline as the army rules and regulations. But apart from that, it was just like playing Boy Scouts, you know, just like, we got our 3 meals a day, and we got our jobs. And
what were the meals like?
Well, you say with me coming out of a rough area, I'm afraid I enjoyed them very much. I did. Bacon and tomatoes, to me, I always enjoy bacon and tomatoes. I can eat them now. I could go in there now and eat a plate of bacon and tomatoes. I've been eating them all my life, and I still enjoy them, you know. Especially if I had a bit of new bread to go with them, you know. When we were at Spennymoor, we got a certain number of cockneys. How would they got up to Spennymoor? I don't know, you know. And the first morning they went in, and we used to sit at 12 on a bench, you know, for your breakfast. And it was smoked bacon and like greasy tomatoes, you know. And we were fit and we were hungry, you know. We used to, on a Saturday afternoon, for a bit entertainment, we'd go for the 10-mile cross-country run. Organised, you know. We'd go down to Spennymoor on a big cross. And when we come in, we could eat the table and mind the food. And we're not going to eat that, you know. And I thought, why? At finish, about 5 Durham lads was eating 12 men's rations, you know. And there you used to go over to the shop and get coffee and a bone and a donut, these things, you know, until the money ran out. Like when the money ran out, about 3 months after that, when they were doing the training, same as us, like fit lads, there used to be a fight for who got to be England tomatoes. They were just same as us. But at the beginning, they didn't like it, they wouldn't look at it. But we us coming from this Durham area and being roofish lads, the group to us, it was substantial, oh yes, there was nothing wrong with me, like.
You mentioned bacon, tomatoes. What would you get for lunch, dinner?
Well, there was always a big pile of taties for you to peel if you were on junk. A big pile. We used to get dinners, yeah. We used to get dinners, and we used to get pretty regular fish, you know. Well, to me, there was nothing wrong. You got no supper, like a sort of, you could get a sandwich and a pot of cocoa sometimes, you know. But if we had tuppence or threepence, we were supposed to get a fish and chips, you know. You could get a fish and a penance of chips, a paper for like that, for threepence. And, you know, why.
What were you paid when you went in?
I believe my first pay was 7 shillings. I'm not. No, if you said it was 10 shillings, I wouldn't argue with you. You know, somewhere in that region.
Did you allocate any of it at home?
Well, yes, and everybody. Well, say they told you that if you allocated 4 shillings home, that if you got killed, your father or your dependents would get a pension of some description, a war pension. Of course, I think everybody did that. I don't know if I remember if I did it or not, to tell you the truth. I know, I think everybody did. Practically everybody, you know, they had this 4 shillings off, which was a big slap off your pay. But I think by the time, I know at that time there was a song run about all for a shilling a day. I don't know if that was appertaining to the army or not, I don't know. But by the time you got your allowance through them and that, there wasn't much left, like, you know. Of course, things were long way cheap, eh? But it doesn't matter where you were at in England, you had a lot of bus fare and that to pay, hadn't you? And you come, I used to come from spending them out to West Arden for 6 months, bus fare. You see straight away, maybe knock you back 6 months, you know, and then. The one thing your beer was about fourpence a pint, old-fashioned fourpence, that's the equivalent to penny halfpenny now, and you could get a good pint of beer for that. And your cigarettes, you got 20 of the best cigarettes in the country for equivalent to 4p now, you know.
Did you have a nappy or a canteen in
there? Oh, yeah, a little bit of nappy in the canteen where you could get a donut and a bone. And, oh, yes. Oh, we used to use all them, yes, yes. We're fit lads, you know, and we were. We could eat anything. That's one thing about the Durham County lads, you know. They don't want you this fancy food that a lot of people seem to like. The bacon and eggs and bacon and tomatoes on a man was a plus on what we got at home. I mean, a lot of them lads at home would get a couple of slices of bread and jam for the breakfasts, you know. And to get a dinner every day on fish maybe twice a week, well, that was real, you know. A lot of them was really better off for food in the army than what they were out of it. I would say, and say the food in the army is regular. Well, when you're at home, if your family was standing well off, maybe it's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, you might get substantial food. Right, Thursday and Friday, waiting a pay day, or waiting a dole day, whatever it was, you had to take potluck. And that's why your stews and your broth and all that come in. You look if you got a bowl of broth. So, way to speak, dose, it was no problem, the food. I used to enjoy the food. It was rough and ready, but it was good. There's nothing wrong with the food.
When you first went in at Spennymoor, where were you accommodated?
In the rink, the Clarence rink.
What were you sleeping on?
Oh, palliasses, yeah. You used to get a palliasse for the straw and go and sleep up yourself in. And then a man you got up, you folded it up and made a little square, you know, for inspection.
Was it on the floor or on a frame?
On the floor. I think later on they maybe get beds, but ours was on the floor. Oh, they still had the dances on the weekend, you know. They used to pull the beds, and you know. And the people used to come in, and girls and the soldiers used to have the dance on the Saturday night. Oh, aye. I mean, it was great, I tell you. It's like being the Boy Scouts for us. We enjoyed it, you know.
What time was Reveille?
Oh, is it seven? First parade used to be 8, was it?
What would you be doing on your first parade?
Breakfast parade. You just get up and get shaved, you know. Get shaved every morning. Which was sort of funny for us, because a lot of us, when we went in the army, didn't shave at all, you know. And some of the sergeants was very strict, you know, and others used to, if they said a bit fluffy, and they used to ignore you, you know. And some members come along and in the morning shave. And that was it, you shaved. See, the same with the haircut. I mean, we all had hair down here and all over. And when you went in, the first thing you did was sit on the chair and the barber give you a big grin like that. And he used to go and give you a pitman. You know, the old pitman used to have the hair right off and little top in the hair. I had a mate, he just died there a couple of years back. He was in the Durham's, like, he finished up in Burma somewhere, but he was a bit of a lad, and he'd been the 8th and 9th Battalion when we were down in Devon, just after Dunkirk, and he he was, you know, he used to go out to Saturday night and have a fight and get a couple of pints of beer and that, and they got sick of him, so they banged him back to Bransford to get, you know, get his cellar, most likely discipline a little bit and then send him back to the battalion, most likely ours, you know. And he was telling me when he came home, you know, he had his hat, the Durhams were that straight, you know, that would be straight, the buttons had to be in line with your nose like that, none of these fancy side. We did that on a weekend, you know, but through the week that had to be dead straight. And we had our hats cocked and back of our heads out of town, and he come straight as a bird it was. I said, by God, they've squared you up, mate, haven't they? He said, what do you mean? I said, you've got your hat on this. Get your hat cocked to the side. No, he says, I win it. When we had a drink or two, he took his cap off and then left him on it to curly. He had curly eye, you know, and when he popped his eye on the side, all his courage, you see, and he was very proud of the night. When he gone back to, he was telling us, when he got back to Bransford, you know, he was up in front of the CEO about his discipline, you know, and the CEO looked at him, he says, take that man away and bring him back respectable. He meant, yeah, you know, so when he went to the barber, he cut all his curls off and just put a couple of that. He was like Snowcomb, and he had his eyes up straight like that. Aye. That same lad finished up a sergeant, and he finished up in Burma. I don't know what regiment he was with.
What was his name?
Andrew Madison. Andrew, right. He finished up in Burma. I don't know. I don't think it was with the Durhams when he finished up. I don't know. I wasn't sure. Had the Durhams some battalions in Burma? Oh, well, I don't know whether he... because what was the sister regiment? The Duke...
Duke of Wellington.
That's right. Maybe it was in them. I wasn't really.
When you come back to Spennymoor, you would get up in the morning, uh-huh, and presume you'd have to clean the space around your bed.
Oh, that was your first job. Oh, God, aye. That'd be folded up and packed a certain length and width, and your kit laid out. And oh, yes.
How often did you get kit inspections in the beginning?
Oh, regular. Oh, regular. We used to get them regular. Yeah. You just keep your... because they give us one of these wooden things to put in your socks and darn them, and I don't think there was a I never met a man yet that could darn his socks. and if they were too bad, you could go out and take them and buy a pair at the Quartermaster Stores, you know, for a few pence. I think we got the easiest way out, we used to go and buy a pair. Although I was always pretty good with socks, like, you know, I could... and same with rope matches, I could match... I know when we did an endurance test once, we had a match for the week, we had a match about 24 mile a day for a week, you know, and just at the end of the day we used to just bibby up, or if there was a, as you said, a hut of some description, you know, belonged to the church, that big yet or something like that, we used to keep in there, or if we were near a village, then maybe the old church, or we used to utilise that. But if it wasn't, we used to just get our ground sheets, two of us together, tie them together and make a little bivouac and sleep rough. And it was good training, that I used to like that. And I've seen me, and at the end of the day, the MO used to come round to everybody. First thing he did was wash your feet, and he'd come round and inspect your feet. And I was very good. I never had a complaint. I never, very, very lucky. I never had a bleb. I never had nothing of no description on my feet. I was always very good feet. I could march. And I just enjoy the rope matches. You go around the countryside, you know, and you think it's hard 24 mile, and it really, you just don't need automatic. And I think that was the idea of the training, you know, so that when you got in action, you could move up and march 24 mile and dig a trench and jump in it and hold your own. And that was the idea, that, you know, that the action became automatic when you were in action.
What did you carry with you on one of these route marches?
Oh, practically everything you had. You know, haversacks, side haversacks. Oh, the lads, everything you had, yeah. It was really good training. It was to train you, you know, in them days there wasn't a transport everywhere you went. Later on in the war, I suppose there was, but in them days there were you used to do a lot of marching, especially in England. You used to do a lot of marching. And at the end of the day, as marching, you were supposed to be as fit as what you were when you started. Or you couldn't fight, could you? It was a really good training. I used to like it. It kept you real fit and well, you know, really good. And then you're walking through these little villages. We were down.
How did people treat you, the civilian population?
Oh, they were good to us. Good to us, yeah. Yeah, we took me out. I tell you, we went to when we left Spennymoor, we went down to, was it Devon? I remember a little village called Ufcombe. They were sort of, at first he looked like a sort of middle class little village, you know, like little, we, our terms they were stuck up a little bit, you know, but they didn't, I was facing the little church, Lads Brigade's Hut, you know, with the double bunks, the wood ones. And we used to explore, you know, after the day's parade, we could walk about the village and one money to go into town every night and have a drink and, you know, a bit of music and a bit of singing. You had to stop in and walk about and enjoy the countryside. And I remember we got on with these people that played tennis. No, in County Durham, especially in my area, tennis was a sissy's game, you know. It was a sissy's game because we couldn't play it, you know, we were working paper. And I didn't know it was hard till I went down there, and I tell you, these people asked us to make a foursome, but we had a go at it. And by God, I found out what a great game it was, you know. But you had to be fit, and you had to be, you know, you had to have a bit of common sense and be fit. And I never made game no more after that. I enjoyed it, and I used to go, every chance I got, I used to have a game.
We'll come to Devon later, of course.
Ah, yeah.
So you got regular kit inspections.
Yes.
If you'd lost any kit or any was missing.
Oh, you had to buy it.
Was there much stealing in the unit in those initial days? We're talking about the initial time.
No. In our lot, there wasn't. I never knew much stealing that right through. I mean, if you had a pair of stockings, you maybe you'd lost them on purpose so you could get a pair. Say you're supposed to produce your stockings. Maybe say they'd been lost or stolen to get a pair of new ones, but we have to buy them. You had to pay for them, you know. And no, we did very well. I think, you know, very well dressed. I tell you, it was to me it was a holiday. Holiday. It was just like being on the holiday.
Your kit would be laid out a special way, no doubt.
Yeah. But there's no harm in that. I mean,
how was that done? How did you lay it?
You have a certain amount of space, and you know, you fold your palliasse up, and that becomes your base for your blankets, and they have to be folded a certain way, and then you regular kit that they use for every day, you know, it was laid out. As long as it was neat and tidy, and you had to fold your blankets, you know, a lot of lads used to just. You had to fold them up so the fold was in front and you looked smart, you know, and looked square. And your palliasse had to be square and your gear had to be aired out. Just the same as when you went in clinks, you had to lie out when you got, you know, when you got 7 days or 14 days in clinks, so your gear was laid out all the time. It's just a form of discipline. There's nothing wrong with that. Well, you had to lie out, there was no to put the bleeding thing, you know, it was just the walls and dance floor.
Who would inspect you?
Oh, the sergeant or the corporal would come round and walk round down, and if he said it, he'd show you and show you and show you until you found out what he wanted. See?
So these were pretty regular, as you said. You'd get up in the morning, you'd clean your bed space, wash and shave.
Yes. Breakfast about 8,
and then you had breakfast parade.
Yes.
After breakfast, what would
you went on training. It's many more training.
What was the initial training?
Oh, you had your rifle practice, your Ben gun practice. Infantry, I was in the three-inch mortars, like, and I did that training. And then you'd go out in the fields and do your, you know, your battle training, because it was really to come back. See, if it'd been an invasion, you were going to have to fight in England, see? And nearly all our training was for English conditions. They went abroad, what they do with the training. But we used to do little schemes. Do these little schemes, you know, one platoon would fight against the other, and we use all the swallies, and, you know, and learn you how to fight in your own country, sort of style. Like the basic principle of, you know, of shading, you keep up the skyline, and using the rifles. We never fired anywhere. Never fired a rifle until we went to fire our courses at Seaburn. Is it Seaburn?
Which one?
Seaburn.
Is it Seaburn?
But that's one point that are against the army. Like, we didn't get plenty of tussies to try no rifles and that. Although I told you, I was in the Thane's Mortars. And we didn't get plenty of practice to find it, you know.
Before we come to talk about 3-inch mortars, initially you'd been taught foot drill.
Oh, aye.
Mm-hmm. Where did that take place in Spennymoor?
Oh, anywhere off the main road, yeah. See, there wasn't a traffic police now, you know. We used to march back through the streets of Spennymoor for our dinners, 60 of us, and nobody would know we were there. We used to go down the park. You know, there's a big park there at Spennymoor, right next to the drill hall. Well, to tell you the drill hall, you know, it's right next to the park. I knew that this because I was born, you know, 50 yards off the park, off the drill hall. I was only born in the drill hall and in the park, and I knew that area very well. I had a sister who lived there, you know.